Yo soy Yolanda Santiago Correa.
Yo soy Nora de Arco.
Yo soy Esperanza Jean.
Yo soy Andrés de Arco.
Soy Gessner Josué Pereira Sánchez Otálora Rentería.
Y bienvenidos a Majestad Prieta.
Hi everybody, bienvenido al primer episodio oficial de Majestad Prieta. Feliz Año Nuevo 2022. We're so happy to be with you and for you to be joining us for the first episode of the season. We're excited for all of the conversations that we're going to be having towards this first season. So you can catch us every third Friday of the month, every third Friday, so el tercer viernes del mes, a las 5 de la tarde, hora central, when we will be releasing an episode monthly. And so we are looking forward to your conversations. Please subscribe, pon las campanitas, comment, give us a review, everything like that. We really appreciate your support and we're excited about all of you listening. Shout out to Peru and Colombia and Germany and Puerto Rico and Mexico. Thank you for listening to us out there. And yeah, we're excited about the community that we're forming and we look forward to our conversation. And so today we're going to be talking about anti-Blackness. And this is a topic that has gained a lot of traction in the last couple of months. Y hemos estado hablando por muchos años, especialmente en los últimos años en la comunidad latina, acerca del anti-Blackness, de las estructuras racistas y antinegras que tienen nuestros países en Latinoamérica y la cultura latina en Estados Unidos. Y nosotros queríamos traer eso como el primer tema del día. Así que, let's talk. What is anti-Blackness? How do we see it expressed in our communities? ¿Qué piensan?
Bueno, ¿qué podemos decir? I feel like anti-Blackness en nuestras comunidades se ve simplemente, y es algo que tomamos en el teaser, simplemente no, la gente no se considera negra, o si se considera negra es un negro alejano de nuestros vecinos en los Estados Unidos, o es un negro alejano de nuestros primos, podría decir, allá africanos, si me entiendes. Es como un alejamiento de ser negro. Para mí, eso es la forma más simple que puedo decir que es anti-Blackness.
Yeah, y yo creo que tenemos que reconocer, we have to acknowledge that anti-Blackness is connected and tied with the process of erasure and white supremacy, right? So erasure and anti-Blackness go together, right? The erasure of individual identities for what we're talking about is Afro-descendant, Afro-diasporic identities is more important. But that's been a major project in the Latin American nation state, and it's been a project of Latinidad, right? Overall, it's like, let's just make sure that no one claims their individuality because we're this mixed rainbow people and that we don't talk about individuality. But that is erasure, and with that comes anti-Blackness, right? The reason for anti-Blackness is to, as one of my friends says, continue the project of mestizando Latinidad to only be one sort of ideal where everyone then gets lost in the milieu. So I think we have to connect the dots of erasure and anti-Blackness, which is not only like self-denial, which yes, sure, there's self-denial and there's, you know, self-recognition and all that, but it's also a project of the nation state, and it's a project of the white supremacist tendencies that our nations have, that even including in the U.S. for Latinos, Latinxes, Latines in the U.S. that is the problem, right? That Latinidad in the U.S. it represents Latinidad or Latino or Caribbean identity, however you want to identify that, from the diaspora into the U.S. and it reflects that. So I think we have to remember to connect those two things.
And I'd say the tension of those two things, it creates this environment and this dynamic that is, it's absolutely crazy making. Porque la realidad es que ese sentimiento de anti-blackness en nuestra comunidad, it touches cada aspecto de la sociedad. You know, whether we're talking about beauty, whether we're talking about labor rights y la economía, and, you know, quite literally being able to take care of yourself and your family. Whether we're talking about, oh my goodness, religión, and who is pure and who is acceptable, who is holy, who is profane, which in our communities that are very much entwined with, there's, I would say, and you guys tell me what you think. I think that the line between what is quote unquote secular and religious within our communities is way more blurred. Like it's a lot more intertwining, you know? And so who is considered to be, you know, pure or upright and all these different things versus who is considered to be profane or less than doesn't stay within the walls of la iglesia. It just doesn't. Like that impacts your day-to-day life of, again, survival, being able to take care of yourself and your family, and also your mental and emotional well-being as to how you're treated within your community and how you're either valued or attacked. And so I feel strongly about highlighting that, porque algunas veces cuando tenemos este tipo de conversaciones se puede sentir como si fuera que esto es una cosa de la academia, que solamente estamos hablando de, oh, eso es una cosa de funifa, esto lo otro, you know, like esa cosa de esos libritos por ahí que nadie está leyendo y que ta, 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 ta. And it's like, no, this is not something that it's not a thought project, you know, like it's not just some metaphorical something that we're picking apart for the sake of being academic or whatever. No, esta es la cosa de la vida y solamente estamos poniendo palabra sobre la cosa, nombrando la cosa que estamos viendo, you know. And no, my abuela would never use the word anti-blackness. Mi abuela ni usa la palabra, you know, Latinx and things like that. Pero la realidad es que these issues of race that is also intertwined with issues of gender are things that have affected her entire life. And same goes for, you know, the rest of my family.
Esperanza, I like what you were saying, like connecting it back to your abuela or like the things that you live in your daily life. And I was reading this interesting quote that was saying that white supremacy is not the shark, it's the water. And so like when we talk about anti-blackness, we got to think about it as something that is surrounding us. And it lives within us, it lives around us, even in things that we don't, it becomes invisible. And that it goes back to what Jose was saying about erasure. That it's around us to a point that we don't even recognize. This is our normal life. This is how we've grown up and the ways that we conceive of the world. So I think it's something that when we talk about it, it's something that touches down, not just on an academic level. Like we say anti-blackness, but it sounds and looks in so many different ways and people have different words for it. But it's something that we live in our daily life. It's not something that we can just extract into putting these words like we're saying.
Y estoy con lo del, porque lo que pienso en la canción esa del tiburón de Rubén Blades, que busca en la orilla, and about all this idea of qué es lo que nos rodea versus, porque es que ese quote, Andrés, te quedó espectacular, porque cuando uno piensa en cosas como el término anti-blackness, lo que pensamos es, oh, it's like a shark, algo que es threatening us, que viene hacia nosotros, pero puede desaparecer y no es algo que se puede extraer porque vive en el mismo medio. Y en eso me pone a pensar todo lo que hemos mencionado, porque hemos dicho varias cosas y me gustaría que como que hablemos un poquito más. Al principio hablamos de Nora mencionó lo de esta idea de separarse de lo negro, ¿verdad? Y de este proyecto que tiene la cultura latinoamericana, tanto en los Estados Unidos como en Latinoamérica continental y el Caribe, de separarse de la idea de lo que es negro o de lo que puede conectarse con lo que es negro. Y una de las primeras cosas que me gustaría tocar, que Josué conectó con eso, fue la idea del mestizaje. esta idea de que los latinos o les latines son mezclados, que es una mezcla entre las culturas indígenas y los africanos y los españoles, y estas ideas que se han formado en diferentes formas en cada país de Latinoamérica y con diferentes nombres, pero que todas perpetúan esta misma idea que Latinoamérica es como un plato de sancocho que se le echaron un montón de cosas y ahora todo el mundo está mezclado. Y el uso de eso como una excusa para entonces no hablar de temas de raza, para entonces no utilizar términos como negro o blanco o trigueño, prieto, tenemos mucho más en español que en inglés, para hablar, porque entonces esta idea que predomina de decir no es que todos somos mezclados o no hablamos de quién es negro o quién es blanco, porque todos somos latinos, puertorriqueños, colombianos, etcétera, cualquier sea el término. So, mestizaje, que para mí es que eso es como el principio de donde todo sale, y aún políticamente es la idea que desde arriba se perpetúa, que todo el mundo tiene.
Yes, es que el problema es que mestizaje is not going anywhere. Like, we just have to acknowledge that mestizaje is not going anywhere. I don't even know that people who identify, self-identify as mestizos, mestizas, mestizas, whatever, I don't think they know the lineage of that term, right? There's a pigmentocracy that was built in Latin America based on racial hierarchy, right? The whiter you were, the better you were recognized, the darker you were, the worse you were, right? There's a famous painting of Las Castas that was prevalent throughout the entire Spanish Empire descendant people, right? I don't think people know, because when I've engaged with people to talk about mestizaje, they continue to redefine it, impose define it, and whatever, but we're using racialized language that is not meant to be reclaimed, right? It's not a term to be reclaimed. It literally was a term of separation. So I think number one, I don't think people understand that mestizaje is part of a racialized nation state and nation building, right? And that is one of the problems. Mestizaje is also the way in which erasure has happened to both people of indigenous descent, or however you want to call that, and people of African descent, right? Where that has been a major part of the ideal, right? I am doing some reading and some writing on San Martin de Porres, or San Martin de Porras, however it's referred to. And one of the books by an American Latino theologian literally erases his blackness, because it tries to prove within his theology that San Martin de Porres is the ideal of mestizo representation, because he's mixed of a white father and of a black mother. And that really actually is not even the definition of mestizo. Like, that is literally not the definition of mestizo, nor does any experience of San Martin de Porres prove the mestizando idea of whatever. So I think there's been a confusion also within Latinos. I think that there's a lack of recognition of mestizaje as a racialized concept. I think that more newer scholarship and newer people are starting to push back against that term, because I think there was an earlier kind of vanguard of theologians and researchers that were like, oh, we're mestizos, we're mestizas. And I think there's people now pushing back on it, like, whoa, I actually am not mestizo, I'm not mestiza, I don't know what that term means. And so we're in this weird ground where I think we have to introduce people to what a racial hierarchy was, to what a pigmentocracy is, to be like, here's what that would rank, here's why I don't represent as mestizo. In the literal definition of mestizo, right? A mestizo or a mestiza is a Spanish white person mixed with an indigenous person. Many people in Latin America would automatically be erased in the literal definition of mestizo, which is why many of us feel mestizaje is not a representative term for people of African descent. So that is all of these, you know, that is some of the problems, right? The African diaspora is not represented in mestizaje. And I think that's really where it starts, because I think the purpose of mestizaje as a part of erasure, the goal of mestizaje is erasure. Now let's make sure that no one knows where they're really from and you're just this mix, and that's where the problem comes with mestizaje.
Y es interesante que menciona la historia política del mestizaje, porque lo que me hace pensar es que precisamente durante el sistema de casta de los españoles, being white was something that you could purchase, right? So there was something que se llamaba la gracia al sacar, where you could literally extract yourself from the caste system if you just had the money. And so ser blanco, las categorías raciales iban mucho más allá de solo ser, oh, a term that we're using, but it's not only racialization, but it's like a socioeconomic structure que tiene una historia where whiteness is put at the top, right, as equal to money as well and power, y todo lo demás entonces está abajo. Y como tú dices, también es esta historia de quién va a dónde, a quién pertenece a qué lugar, y esto de mestizo versus mulato y la manera en que mulato y otras palabras como trigueño, negro, café con leche, todas estas categorías que nos hemos inventado para crear esa misma pigmentocracy, ese mismo colorismo que viene entre quién es más clarito, quién es más oscuro, quién puede decir, ah, no, yo soy blanquito y hincho, todas estas palabras que tenemos en español y las maneras que eso entonces se expresa también, como dijo Esperanza, en no solo en cosas académicas o en la política o en lo socioeconómico, pero también en las maneras en que percibimos la belleza, merece estar en una novela, merece ser gobernador, presidente, todas estas cosas. Y la manera en que el lenguaje también entonces reproduce eso con frases como no puedes dañar la raza o tenemos que mejorar la raza, experiencias de personas que sus padres o sus mamás le dicen no te vayas al sol porque te vas a poner prieto y todas esas cosas. Y yo creo que entonces todo esto se va conectando y vuelve a esa historia, ¿verdad? Que se borra y que no... y que hace falta que reconozcamos que está ahí.
Y pienso de una de las dificultades que tenemos cuando estamos hablando de mestizaje, es que la gente que siente un, como, no me viene la palabra ni en inglés ni en español, pero como un, like a sense of, I guess, warmth, or que le gustan esa, you know, that label, that they connect to it, they identify with it. Cuando uno viene diciendo, mira, esta cosa que tú identificas es una cosa terrible, mala, fea. Like, aléjate de eso. Like, let that go. It's not that we're wrong in saying this. The history is the history. The receipts are the receipts, period, punto. Like, that's not to debate. The difficulty is on... y yo sé que we were joking about this earlier, feelings. The feelings. The feelings are a big part of the problem. Es que la gente se siente como atacado en un nivel, you know, like visceral, like resisting this identity, this very real identity crisis of like, espérate, pero si tú me quote unquote, roba.
Si me lo quitas, no tengo nada.
Si me lo quitas, si me roba de esto, like, then wait a minute, then what, then who am I and what do I have and what, da, da, da. And that takes work. It takes work to move through that place of unknowing and to move through that place of exploration towards something new. Y la realidad es que tenemos muchísima gente que están cansados de su trabajo, de la batalla que tienen en su vida ya, and they're just like, this other thing. And then also, this also speaks to the seduction of power that white supremacy offers at nearly, not cada uno no, pero because when we get to the real bottom of the rung, there is no seduction of power. You're just stuck there. Pero if you're not completely stuck at the most marginal place of blackness, femininity, queerness, poverty, then there is some level of seduction of like, pero espérate, el pedacito que yo tengo that this system allows me to use to my advantage, I don't want to let that go. Like, la gente que identifican con mestizaje, like, even if it's not conscious, as soon as that resistance hits your body of not wanting to let that go, that is proof that on some level, aunque sea unconscious, you know that there is a lower level of oppression, which we know in this podcast is blackness, that you don't want to identify with, that feels dangerous. you feel that danger. It makes me think of, granted, esto no está conectado a like, or not, no está colocado en Latinoamérica, but when it comes to the broader project of white supremacy, this one famous white woman, I can't remember her name right now. Maybe we can put it in the show notes if it's important. Who's was researcher for decades, et cetera. One of you might remember her. I think it's Elliot something. Anyway, she did this project where when she's doing talks, she's been doing solidarity allyship work around anti-racism before anti-racism was even a phrase. And so when she's talking to, you know, full-blown white people, like American white people, who will pretend as if como si fuera que ellos no entienden la cosa de racismo y que esto no existe y esto lo otro. And she'll say like, okay, está bien. So any one of you that would love to be treated the way a Black person is treated in this country, you know, párate ahora mismo, like stand up, show yourself, like have at it, come. And even the most, you know, this country is not racist, we're colorblind, we're, you know, what are you talking about? Those people are glued to their seats, like, because somewhere in your bones, somewhere in your, what's the word I'm looking for? Survival reflex. You know, Black people are out here getting jacked up. But so that you can sleep at night, you know, you want to pretend that that's not a thing. And so anywho, I bring that up to say that there is this deeper level of knowing that we need to acknowledge is a thing and acknowledge that there is a crisis around the self. And I also think también este pensamiento de like hyper individualization, thanks to the Western imperialist empire that we live in or near. I think that hyper individualization allows for what Josue was just talking about, where people feel like, no, I have the right to redefine this term for myself. Like I have the right not only to redefine it for myself, but yo tengo el privilegio to have an ahistorical redefinition of it. Like I don't have to take into consideration the context. Well, I'm not a historian. ¿A quién le importa eso? Like I just wanna run off the top of whatever I feel and I think. This hyper individualization really, really, really undermines our collective conversation, because it really highlights, or it really praises, honestly, ignorance. It justifies it as like, it's okay to do this thing because I am me.
Y para mí también, no solo que it praises that, pero lo conecta a esta idea de excepcionalismo, de movimiento hacia arriba, where you have to work hard and you have to get like what we haven't gotten before. And so race y todas estas definiciones fatula that we have about race también son parte de la herramienta that give the Latino community, the Latinx community as a whole, una cosa más, un peldaño más para seguir subiendo. And to say, you know, like, vamos a ese sueño, en el caso de los Estados Unidos, ¿verdad? El sueño americano, y esta idea de que tenemos que obtener the white picket fence house with the job and the children kind of thing, que conecta entonces con ideas machistas y de familia y otras cosas que también son predominantes en Latinoamérica. Pero entonces es eso, it's that connection to mobilization, what and right, and how moving up and obtaining is what we all need to strive for, y el ser negro is seen as an impediment to that, and so we need to detach in order to make it happen and for it to and for you know, the whatever we do to be considered successful or admirable or whatever. I think those two really, really do connect.
Yeah, I think even further with mestizaje, like it's, when we think about mestizaje, just like Jose was saying, like it's not including, it's not only just not including Black people, but you find out what it actually represents when Black people actually start to claim their Blackness and the rejection that ensues within the community when people actually start claiming their own history and being proud of their own Blackness. That's when we see that pushback. And that's where the mestizaje comes in. Like, no, we're all, why can't we all just be mixed, right? And I think it goes even on the other side too. I think about my roommates, and I was having a conversation with two of my roommates who are from Nigeria, and they were talking about like their history in Nigeria, and it was crazy to me that they didn't have any sort of teaching in their schools about what Nigeria looked like during colonial times. Like what did it look like when Britain was actually had a Nigeria as a colony? Like there was no teaching of it. And that goes here in Colombia as well. Like there's no, when you try to look into the school curriculum about what Colombia looked like during colonial times, during slavery, before slavery, there's no actual serious conversations being had about it. And that's also intentional. That's also part of what we talk about when we talk about the erasure that comes with overall mix, overall the same people, right? So I think that's something that I think is also one of those big impediments that we literally don't learn about ourselves. And that's part of that project, to just not know where we come from.
Right, and I think that's why it's, we could refer to it as the way that white supremacy has interpreted itself in Latin America, and therefore to the Latino, Latinx, Latina diaspora, right? Like that's really what mestizaje has done, because it's really a white supremacist enterprise, right? Where the majority of people in Latin America and Latinos in the Latinxes in the US identify as mestizo. And some then they identify therefore as white, because I think Yolanda, you brought something good about the being able to purchase the white privilege, right? So therefore, there's definitely that part that ties with everything that Esperanza was saying, that there's a personal identity aspect to it, right? Like, I don't want to be como el Sambo or el Negro or el Prieto. I'm not trying to be like that. I am trying to be like this, like del Castellano and whatever. So let me be like that. And so if I have to redefine myself, redefine this term as a way for me to do that, fine. And then the problem is that, you know, you get 20 degrees removed and then people don't know what that means, right? They don't know what the original thing means. They don't know what that represents. And then we come and we're like, that don't represent me. Now we have a clash, because someone that looks like me is telling me that he is mestizo. And I'm like, brother, you ain't mestizo at all. Like, you would not be able to be mestizo in any sense of the word, right? And so there is a problem with that. And I think that's what leads to the anti-Blackness within the Latinx, Latina, Latina community, that there is this self-recognition of, because it's been internalized, right? We've been conditioned to think these things. Then therefore we're like, well, I don't want to be like that. Because then, you know, another problem with the anti-Blackness is that then we otherize Black diasporic people from other places, right? So people who are from the continent of Africa, or people who are from other parts of, people always say that. And we've heard different things. I don't know if you have heard, if y'all have heard, but I've heard that people say, well, I don't want to be Black like the Blacks in the US, or I don't want to be Black like the Blacks in here, or I don't want to be like the Blacks in Y, or I don't want to be like, and you know, that comes from the legacy of Haiti. That comes from so many things that are so connected to the anti-Blackness project. And that's what we have to understand, that it's intentional. Like, maybe by now people have feelings and some people don't know, but there was a point in time when it was clearly intentional, right? It was clearly an intentional project, which is why, like I told you, my friend who's an academic who studies and writes about Black indigeneity and all this stuff, he calls it as like the project of mestizaje, right? Like it's a project, it was willful. So anyway, sorry.
No, y el proyecto de mestizaje que también se conecta con proyectos de otras cosas, como el proyecto de latinidad o la hispanidad, porque ahora que menciona Haití, que por cierto, feliz día de la revolución de Haití, que se celebra al principio de este mes, pasa con Haití, pasa con Brasil también, que entonces los espacios están, especialmente en Estados Unidos, cuando hablamos de hispanidad o hablamos de latinidad, se excluye Brasil y se excluye Haití. Y cuando tú miras a la población de Brasil y a la población de Haití, yo no creo que es coincidencia que las poblaciones que se están excluyendo son mayoritariamente negras. Y tienen una historia bien particular, bien atada a esa identidad, no solo políticamente, sino también, como mencionamos antes, religiosamente, que entonces también es algo que viene dentro de la conversación, esa aspiración hacia lo sagrado, hacia lo que es puro, que la iglesia, que también era parte de todo este proyecto colonial de España y todo eso, perpetuó y continúa perpetuando desde las imágenes que nuestras familias tienen en las casas con el Jesús blanquito de los ojos azules, hasta qué prácticas se consideran dignas de la iglesia cristiana. Cuando digo la iglesia hablo del cristianismo, y las cuales no son dignas, y cómo prácticas que vienen pues de sanación o de otras prácticas comunitarias se ven como satánicas, del diablo y todas estas cosas, pero a la misma vez tú ves esta gente yendo a santiguarse o a darse una limpia o todas esas cosas. Y entonces es la conexión de toda esta estructura uniéndose para crear sort of the super structure, the water, like Andrés said, that is surrounding us and that keeps connecting like a web to everything else. And so it's not only that it's the project of mestizaje, como tú mencionas, Josué, it's like it's hispanidad, it's latinidad, it's the project of the church and what is purity and what is sacred and what is profane. It's beauty and how we ascribe to European standard beauties, standards of beauty. It's, you know, it's our language and the words that we use. It's the fact that, por dar un ejemplo de Puerto Rico, nosotros utilizamos la palabra cafre, o se utiliza mucho la palabra cafre para decir que alguien es, it's the equivalent of what ghetto would be in English. So decir que alguien es como del barrio, que no es refinado, whatever. But then when you look at the etymology of cafre as a word, it comes from kafir, which was a word used I can't remember the specific country, so I won't say it for lack, for not being wrong, but it was used against a specific community from a country in Africa to make them, you know, para minimizarlo. It was a derogatory term. That's what I'm looking for. Y entonces evoluciona a cafre, which is now used to talk about people que vienen de los caseríos o que vienen del barrio that don't have the sort of languaging or education or whatever. And so it's the way that all of these things connect and continue to reproduce estos proyectos as sort of this overarching water that we're just constantly not only surrounded with, but drowning in a sense in.
Yolanda, I think that country that you were talking about is actually South Africa, I believe. And it's so funny because white South Africans are now considered Africana, I think they say something like that. And then the Black people who are originally from there are considered this demeaning term. So it's very, yes, Afrikaans. I'm gonna just spell it out with two A's. So it's just very interesting because, like you're saying, like our identities are robbed in so many ways, and then we're labeled as we're othered, right? We're robbed and then we're othered. And personally, I feel like it creates within us a lot of como un bote que va como que si sabe que es de otra cosa, pero no se puede encontrar muy bien, porque lo que nos dijo es que no podíamos ser así. Y yo creo que en estas generaciones nosotros estamos tratando de reclamar más lo que somos, pero en las generaciones como las de mi abuela, todavía es aún un problema ser totalmente negro, porque para ellos le enseñaron que ser totalmente negro no era. Así que esto es una cosa de bastante desaprendizaje, bastante unlearning.
Y también eso me recuerda, ahora que mencionas la generación de tu abuela, Nora, que es un struggle que yo estoy teniendo con mi propia familia ahora mismo. And it's almost like a running joke that we have, but it goes much deeper, porque mi abuela tiene un empeño con decir de que nosotros somos caucásicos. And I'm like, abuela, we're not Caucasian. We're There's no way we can ever even get to that word. But and it almost sounds funny, but then when you start going back into the history of how they were taught that term and how that term was sort of morphed or like redefined, que es lo mismo que estábamos mencionando antes, in order to give something to the generation to say, nosotros somos algo that is not necessarily estadounidense, in the case of Puerto Rico, that's sort of the definition that we have, primero España y después Estados Unidos. So, and it was a way where language was used where they could be like, no somos necesariamente estadounidense, but we're not like this people right here, right? Nosotros nos estamos separando, we're othering, como dijo Josué, from the community, and we're saying, estamos algo entre medio, pero más pa acá, pa lo blanco que pa allá. And so it's a running joke in my family, but it's a serious thing. Y entonces, yo he seguido tratando de buscar la historia. And when I keep finding things and I'm like, abuela, mira esto. She's like, no, I don't remember, or I don't know. So it's almost this thing of like, como decía Esperanza, this visceral reaction about refusing to think about it and seeing in the realization that, that you might not be, or that might not be what you thought, una amenaza directa a tu identidad, a tu ideales, a tu familia, everything like that.
And I just want to highlight, I hear this theme coming up multiple times of the ways that we, the collective we, is and has been educated. And I want to highlight that as like a prime example of what Andres already brought up in that metaphor of the water. And this is why the hyper individual fantasy, really, of I can define this however I want to. I can attach whatever meaning to this that I want to so that I can hold on to it, is foolishness, you know, for you as a person individually and for the community collectively. Because at the end of the day, it is, as has been pointed out, it is intentional, these different ways, whether we're talking about gente in Nigeria who aren't being taught, you know, I don't have to repeat what Andres already said and what's already been said, but these gaps in history that are removed so that our peoples, we will believe that, one, the colonial project ended. That's one piece of mess that is just floating around in the atmosphere. Post-colonial, where, honey, where? So there's that. Pero también to be able to perpetuate these ideas of mixedness, and this particular type of mixedness, this mestizaje of specifically indigeneity and Spaniard whiteness, to really whitewash Latin America. And it's yeah, I'll pause there.
Mm-hmm. That's I know we're getting caught up here. There's so much to say here, and hemos dicho muchas cosas. I want to go off on a lot of things, but I do think the last thing that you mentioned, Esperanza, of whitewashing, right, is a really important part, because that's where the anti-Blackness comes from, right? Is the idea of whitewashing, is the idea of trying to be, and it connects to what you said, Yolanda, trying to not say that we're part of the empire. And PR, I know it's a unique thing, but even in the rest of Latin America, yo lo puedo decir como colombiano, like my dad was always proud of his Blackness, but he never dealt with Blackness as a topic. My dad was a writer. He never wrote about Blackness or his experience, but he would talk about it. Like he would talk about it, like, because of my Blackness, X and X happened, X and X this, X and X that. But he would never really write about it, because that's not what would advance him in his career, right? I'm not giving him a pass. Like, I love my dad and all that, but that's just the reality of what that is. And that's where ultimately happens with Latinidad here in the States or in everywhere else, where it's like, well, how do we get past, how do we move forward in this thing, right? And mistakenly, that has been for a long time, let's negate certain aspects of who we are. And I think what we're doing in this podcast and what other, you know, as we do coalition building and all that, is we're saying, no, 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 I can advance while being my full self, because being my full self is important. And so whether we're talking about it in Christianity, right? Many of us come from a background that is tied to that, or whether we're talking about it in that, is being your full self. That wasn't always the case. Like I said earlier, I'm doing some research on San Martin de Porres. And he wasn't necessarily like going out there like Esperanza. I said, my grandma didn't have anti-blackness or whatever. He wasn't out there saying like, I'm black and therefore I'm proud. Like, he's not James Browning still. But that's where that's where we come from. We're like, well, you know what? Let me help people misunderstand that he ain't a mestizo brother. That brother is a black diasporic brother. And that his experience is a black diasporic experience. And that's where we come from. And I think that's a really important part, because we can help with that process of I think someone said, I think Andres or Nora said, of unlearning, right? We've mentioned that topic before, that there's a process of unlearning, right? You have to unlearn and then relearn, right? Because you can't just unlearn, you have to relearn. So how do we relearn to value blackness? How we relearn to value all aspects of whatever we consider Latinidad, Caribbean identity, right? How do we relearn all those things to value them?
Es que, pues ese es el punto de este podcast, que un día no vamos a tener estas aguas que nos ahogan. We're not going to be drowning in these waters that tell us that our blackness and our full authentic selves, como Josué está diciendo, no son valiosas, no son hermosas. O sea, vamos a tener una vida a donde estas aguas no nos están ahogando, más bien podemos nosotros nadar en esas aguas, nadar y ser totalmente libre, ¿no? Como uno cuando, I don't know about y'all, but I love the water, porque yo me siento libre en el agua. Yo me siento que yo, you know, I can just float, I can be, and it just, ah. Y creo que esto es lo que tratamos de hacer en este podcast. Decirles que los vemos, decirles que entendemos estos problemas que algunas veces ni tenemos el vocabulario para expresar, y un día vamos a salir, vamos a nadar y vamos a poder expresarnos auténticamente, porque ser negro no es nada malo. Ser negros, I mean, we're the OG creators, you know what I'm saying? So, nada funciona sin nosotros. I mean, we, desde nuestro idioma, al vestido, a las comidas, o sea, our people have contributed so much to this world in many diverse ways. Y un día vamos a poder ser our authentic selves without having to hide.
Es que sin la negritud, no, there is no Latinidad. There is no, right? Without blackness, Latinidad would not be very Latino, Latinx, like whatever at all. Most of the things that people celebrate about Latinidad are centered in African diasporic stuff. So I think let's just keep it real. Like, Argentinians be claiming tango as their natural thing. Tango is an African dance. Like, there's mad stuff. We could go through merengue that, you know, the Dominicans claim merengue. Merengue is African. That's an African word. And so we can go down the list of different things that we're like, oh, we claim that thing. Yeah, that thing comes from the continent. So.
Y yo creo que entonces esa es la parte de como han dicho, el proyecto de este podcast y el goal, la meta. Es decir que es no solo hablar de lo negativo, ¿verdad? Es no solo pensar en todas las cosas que todavía tenemos que aprender, que deconstruir, que hablar, pero es también soñar con un futuro, con ese día en el que vamos a reconocer, hopefully un día no muy lejano, all these things, right? And we'll be able to continue having these conversations. Y con ese mismo pensamiento, part of what we want to include as part of this podcast is a part of celebration. Muchas de las cosas que usualmente se utilizan para marketing con la comunidad latina, Latinx, etc., es esta idea de la fiesta, ¿verdad? Y que nos gusta festejar. Pero la verdad es que nos gusta el party, nos gusta el bembé, nos gusta la chercha, ¿sabes? Nos gusta. Y por eso también en este podcast queremos incluir una parte de celebrar. So, ¿Cuáles algunas de las celebraciones que tenemos? ¿Cuál es el bembé corriente? ¿Cuál es la parranda que tenemos corriendo? Para mí, una de las cosas que tenemos que celebrar y podemos hablar de la representación y de lo que significa y podemos deconstruirlo mucho, pero sin ir en mucho detalle, recientemente vi la película Encanto. Y la manera en que se representó, yo no soy colombiana, solo los que son de Colombia pueden hablar un poquito más que yo, pero para mí la manera en que los personajes se representaron y the way that culture was highlighted in food and dance, Antonio was my favorite, like I loved everything about him. Y aunque pues la representación is not our salvation and all these things, I think it deserves a moment of celebration, the fact that my niece and my nephew and sort of all of these kids around my community were like, ay, mira, yo me parezco a Antonio, mi pelo es como el de Dolores, and they're seeing probably for the first time a character in a Disney film that looks like them. So I think that's reason for celebration.
I just want to give a quick shout out that it's someone I work with here, an Afro-Colombiano in New York, Maurice Cañate, who recorded the drumming for Encanto, someone I've worked with Afro-Colombia in New York. He posted that he was recording. So he recorded most of the drumming for Encanto. So shout out Maurice Cañate for the work that he did for that film. He's a great percussionist de la Costa Pacífica de Colombia.
I think other celebrations, as we also mentioned, el Día de la Independencia, the Day of Independence de Haití, el Día de los Reyes, el 6 de enero, which is also part of our culture and part of the celebrations that if we look towards the roots of what is practiced during el Día de los Reyes, connect back to the diaspora as well. Any other celebrations that we have before we close out?
And tú mencionar el, you know, the celebration of Haiti's revolution and liberation. Me viene a la mente imaginar que un día dentro de Latinoamérica, ese ejemplo de Haití sería like a collective celebration. Just even thinking about that makes, yeah, kind of chokes me up a little bit. Yeah. I think that would just be, un día será.
Un día, because IT literally helped the quote unquote liberation of most of the Latin American states. Literally, IT went and sent armies and weapons and money to literally most people, except for very few, was like, we'll help you out. We got you. We already figured out how to defeat the Europeans. For me, I think celebrando todo eso, I think celebrando también the amount of creatives that I've seen and creativity that I see in just the Black Latinx, however you want to call the diaspora of our people. I see it all over social media. I see it all over the, I see it over different media circles. I continue to see more representation. Just the other day I saw, and representation is important. I know it's not the salvation, but just the other day I saw a commercial featuring Afro-Latinas, Afro-Latinos speaking Spanish, not translated, but actually in Spanish. And I was really excited to see that. And I think that representation goes a long way into dismantling white supremacy and mestizaje.
Y con eso celebramos, soñamos, y en medio del agua que todavía estamos, que está fuerte, seguimos nadando, right? Like finding Nemo says, we just keep swimming, and we hope towards that celebratory day, and we continue to do the difficult work, which is the goal of this podcast, and we hope is the message and the task that you take from this. So, como mencioné al principio, we will be releasing an episode every third Friday of every month at 5 p.m. Central. So, únete, suscríbete, déjanos tus comentarios, tus sugerencias, escríbenos on Instagram, comparte tu historia, si tienes alguna razón de celebrar, tag us and join, let us join in your celebration and tu fiesta as well. And thank you for listening. We will see you in February. Bye.